Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today shares his story of coming to terms with a difficult father. Wade Rouse and his father, Ted, were utterly different men. Ted was a no-nonsense engineer, never expressed emotions. He was a born pessimist who measured life and relationships as if he were viewing a balance sheet. Wade, on the other hand, was fond of saying manhood in his Southwest Missouri home was defined by sports, hunting, and fishing, but his world was filled with reading, writing, and cooking. But what he desired most was acceptance of his life, his work, by his father. As adults, the two went through periods of estrangement, but they did have one common bond, a love of listening to St. Louis Cardinals baseball. And that tiny thread became a lifeline that helped the two find common cause late in his father's life. Rouse's memoir, Magic Season, offers a window into fathers and sons and difficult relationships, how Cardinal baseball became a connector between the two, and a primer on how to continue to love someone who is, well, frankly, difficult to love. Wade Rouse is a best-selling author of 13 books, including 4 memoirs and 9 novels. Most of his novels have been published under his grandmother's name, Viola Shipman. His newest book is titled Magic Season, A Son's Story. And if you love Cardinal baseball, if you've had difficult relationships, it's a wonderful book. He's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Wade Rouse, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This book will make a lot of sense for a lot of fathers, a lot of sons. Magic Season describes the very difficult relationship that you had with your father, a man that was very different from you in virtually every way, but the one thread that you shared was a passion for St. Louis Cardinal baseball. How important was that in your relationship?
It was hugely influential. You know, I think it served as our conduit through the years of our relationship and really as our love language. You know, my dad was a true Ozarks man, and he was not really able to express his emotions freely. And so baseball gave us a way to sit down over the years and connect through the history of the Cardinals players, and over time really connect more deeply on a personal level. So it really meant everything.
Now, tell us a little bit about your father. Your father was an engineer by trade, a man obviously shaped by the Depression in some way or another. He sounds like he never met a penny he could put in his pocket rather than spend, and really had a pessimist out view towards life, towards everything that happened in his life and the lives of those around him.
Yeah, you know, my dad, born in the 30s, came of age in rural Missouri in the Ozarks, a little town called Neosho, Missouri, in the 1950s. His parents, you know, lived through the Depression, and that environment, and I think financially, really shaped him and the person he became. My dad was a chemical engineer and really kind of calculated everything in his life, from, you know, emotion to money. And he was a difficult man, a complicated man, but he was a big personality. He just really did not know how to show any of his emotions. You know, as I write in the book, you know, if something went wrong in his life, he would turn it off, you know, just like he would a Cardinals game if they got too far behind. He just didn't have any way of dealing with that. But my dad was also, I felt in his heart, a good man. And, you know, when in writing nonfiction, I come from a world where I try to seek to understand and not to blame. And that really helped me stick by my father over the years. But my dad was a big personality, you know, Whitey Herzog personality, Tony La Russa, that kind of overshadowed my family. And, you know, when life got very tough for him, you know, I lost a brother when I was 13 and he was 17. And, you know, my mother was a very independent thinking nurse. I think those things challenged my father in ways that he couldn't deal with and had no way to deal with.
Hmm. And how did he try to deal with it?
You know, my dad drank a lot. My dad would shut us off. You know, if he couldn't deal with it, if he couldn't calculate and compute it, then he just moved on. You know, I was not a typical Ozarks boy. You know, I always say in the Ozarks, boys had to learn to do three things in the 1970s. They had to learn to hunt, to fish, and to play baseball. And, you know, fishing was about the only thing I could do too well at all. And my dad tried his darndest to teach me to play baseball, but I failed. And I remember one day standing in the backyard when my dad threw down his glove and said that I would never be a real man. And, you know, it hurt me deeply. And, you know, all a kid wants in his life is to make his dad happy. And, you know, I just wanted unconditional love and acceptance, which is the foundation of this book. And, you know, I stood in the shadows for many years and watched my dad listen and watch Cardinals games and listen to Jack Buck. And, you know, finally, that became a way for us to connect. My dad told me once that the game of baseball was just like life. It was the tiny decisions inning to inning that made the difference in the end. And I never forgot that.
It's interesting that you didn't like to play baseball and you didn't feel like you were particularly accomplished playing baseball, but yet the love of listening to baseball with your father became this sort of one thread that wasn't cut at some point during your life.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Baseball hasn't really changed much over the years. You know, there might be a few too many meetings on the mounds or too many commercials for people's taste, but it's largely the same game. You know, it's a thinking man's game. It is a, it's the only game that really doesn't have a clock to it. So, you know, it's not going to end until it ends. And my dad kind of, you know, taught me what was known as the Cardinals way. And there was a Rouse way to doing things as well. And I understood, you know, I wanted to play the game. I couldn't. I was not an athletic kid. You know, had poor vision like Mr. Magoo. My body was shaped like a cartoon sponge. I was not athletic at all. And yet I understood and admired the game and the players who played it. You know, my dad used to always say, you know, take a walk when you can, or sacrifice a man up a base, or, you know, hit for a sacrifice fly instead of swing for the fences. And you could see how the game was played from pitch to pitch, you know, the way the defense was set up. And I really understood that and admired that. And I saw it was a way that my dad was really trying to teach me life lessons as much as the game itself.
But there was also other lessons that you learned about him, because it was about take the sacrifice fly, don't swing for the fences. And that sort of marked his own life.
It did. Yeah, my dad was very pragmatic. You know, he felt that you really should not rock the boat, that there, you know, the world was kind of played out in a certain way, and you don't mess with that. You know, he was always thrilled if he got a 2% raise. You know, if the stock market went up a couple of percent, he was very happy. He just didn't really kind of expand his boundaries in any way. And that's the way he always lived. And I have to say, you know, growing up, you know, I understood why. My dad, you know, I had a paper route growing up, and my dad actually took my allowance. I never had any money to spend on my own to go around the square in Neosho or go to Pizza Hut or, you know, buy jeans. My dad invested that money, or he started a college fund for me. He bought my first car, which I had to pay back along with the insurance. You know, there were really never gifts of the heart. They were lessons. And so, you know, it was a difficult childhood. I often never understood why my dad was doing these things to me. But as an adult, I have to say they've been foundational, because being an author is very hard. And I call publishing today BART. You know, it's art, but it's business comes first. And, you know, kind of the groundwork he set for me has really saved my tail over the years.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, there's quite a bit about balance sheets. I mean, he really measured his life through the money he saved. And it really was almost he viewed his life as a balance sheet, and was always staying, you know, trying to keep positive cash flow. And he really took self-worth from that, I believe, from my reading of the book.
Yeah, he did. You know, he was very proud. You know, I think growing up as he did, you know, none of my grandparents graduated from college. And My mother was the first in our family to go to college. My grandmother and Grandpa Shipman saved change in an old crock in their garage so she could go to college. And she was a working poor seamstress, and he was an ore miner. And same way with my dad's parents. My grandma Rouse was a seamstress. So I think he grew up knowing the value, as you said, of a penny. And I also think he knew the difficulty that my grandparents had. And he was very proud of saving. He felt, though, that any day a new depression was going to come along, that he could lose everything, that I could lose everything. And I think when we lost my brother, that compounded that. And anything that he had that was concrete, that was saved, that was put away, brought comfort to him. There wasn't a risk involved. And then, as I always say, along came me, and I was the riskiest it factor of all.
Yeah. No, earlier you were talking about how you were just looking for an expression of unconditional love, and I was really struck early on in the book about the thing where he expressed pride about you was in your ability to endure pain. I found that very telling. How do you process that, especially as you're writing about that years later?
It was, it was very difficult. This book takes place in at 2015, the very last baseball game I watched with my dad, against the Chicago Cubs in a division playoff series, and it kind of goes inning by inning through that game and back and forth through our lives. And it was very hard to get my father to open up to me, to express any emotion or any background to me. And I struggled my entire life to kind of get, what I hoped for, which was a walk-off home run in the ninth inning for my dad's approval and love. It was hard. He didn't ever understand what I did. He didn't understand that I liked books and that I liked to write. He never understood my life, as first as a PR director and then as an author. He always said, how do you make a living communicating? That never really computed to him. So it was a long, hard journey to get to a place of acceptance with him.
And I'm sure he did not understand your sexuality. You're a gay man and living happily as a couple. And I'm sure that was a serious area of schism, if you will.
It was, my dad, growing up in for me in rural America in the 1970s, I had no role models. I had no one to reach out to. I had no one to speak to. I thought I was the only person like me in the world. And it was very difficult. I just tried to isolate myself for many years. I gained a lot of weight. At one point, I even tried to take my life. My dad didn't understand. He was a man of that era and that environment, that he couldn't talk to anybody about the way I was or seek help or advice in any way. And when I came out to my father, he thought that I had done him wrong. He thought that, that my world was going to be a very, very dark place, and he couldn't comprehend it. And he wrote me, as I write in the book, a very long letter, saying that he basically wasn't going to have anything to do with me again. And it traumatized me greatly, and I had to cut my father out of my life for a number of years. And as I write in the book, my dad's apology came when Mark McGwire broke the home run record, and he called me out of the blue and said he didn't do it alone. It took a team. And I knew that was my dad's apology. But our whole relationship was rooted in a lot of pain. And as you referenced earlier, there was an incident in which my dad pulled me from swimming lessons and took me to the creek and threw me in where my grandparents had a log cabin. And I struggled mightily, not only to swim, but to survive in a fast, swift current. And my dad just sat on the rocky beach drinking a beer, watching me fight. And you talk about pain. I just, I feel like I only learned to survive. I never really helped learned how to swim in this world. And this book is really kind of, an arm out, a hand out for anybody that's ever had a difficult relationship with a family member.
Yeah, I mean, the two incidents I remember that he took pride in you was your ability to walk across an Ozark sandbar, or actually be more like a rock bar beach, without shoes. And, you know, anybody who's experienced that, I mean, the rocks are incredibly sharp. Nobody wants to walk without shoes on those things. And when you broke a finger, that almost the bone's coming out, and he said, he's a tough guy. He can handle anything. And, I mean, these were the sort of things you were hinging on. Just like you described when Mark McGwire broke the home run record, it was like no apology. As close to an apology as you would get was this idea that it takes a team to do this. I mean, that's really searching for a metaphor.
It is my father, his entire life was that way. You know, it was a hard joke at your expense. It was a difficulty totally in trying to express everything. And, you know, I've learned in my life, you know, my mother was a nurse and then later in her life, a hospice nurse. And she traversed the Ozarks, you know, for the last decade of her career, caring for people that didn't have any family left. They didn't have any money. They had no health care. And yet she was there for them. And I used to go on these journeys with her. And my mother was the one who taught me about living my life without regrets, and also what it meant to give and receive unconditional love, which is, she said, the hardest thing in this world to do, you know, love without conditions. I love you, but, or I love you if. And I realized that my entire relationship with my father had always been based on conditional love. You have to do this to earn it. You must be like this to have my compassion. And she changed me, and those rides around the Ozarks changed me greatly, because I felt that my father deep down was a good person that had been formed by hardship and loss and environment. And he had no way to express any of that in this world. And I stuck by him. You know, many people said I was a fool. My husband thought I was an idiot. My mother didn't know if she gave me a chance to walk away. And I believe there was something in him that was transformational, and he proved me right.
My guest today is Wade Rouse. He's a novelist and memoirist. His latest book is titled Magic Season, A Son's Story. It's published by Hanover Square, which documents the very difficult relationship he had with his father that was at times virtually apart, except for this shared passion of St. Louis Cardinal baseball. If you love Cardinal baseball, there'll be lots of allusions to great moments in Cardinal history that the two of them shared. And of course, this last ball game at the end of his father's life, which drives the story. Well, this book is about how baseball is this unbreakable thread for the two of you, but it's also a book on how to love a person that's difficult to love. That must have been a very, very long process.
It was. It took my entire life. I consider this to be the most heart-wrenching and yet life-affirming book that I've ever written. And it took me, as you know, when you experience great loss in your life, my dad was my last immediate family member. My mother passed away in 2009. My brother passed away long ago. And then my dad. Takes you a while to process that, and I had to take a step back. And I've always come from this place of trying to understand how and why we become the people we are. You know, and I call it the ghosts on our shoulders. We're all formed by everything that's happened in our past, and that certainly was the case in my dad. But I believed that within him he could change, and that's why. He used to call me, "You're a damn optimist," and I'm proud of that. I was like knocking my head against a rock in the creek for many, many years, but I'm very proud of that.
Your husband was he was more of a pragmatic sort himself, and he was basically was thinking you should write this relationship off. Your mother, though, had important advice for you. What did your mother relate to you about the relationship with your father?
You know, it's It's interesting. Yeah, my husband Gary, we've been together now 27 years, was really, he's the most honest, open human being in the world. And he used to confront my father, especially about just saying he was proud of me. You know, he would always say, "Tell your son you're proud of him." And my father never could do that to my face. And my mother, you know, as a hospice nurse, taught me many, many lessons. And it's interesting where I grew up. We grew up on 10 acres in a little town called Granby, Missouri. And everybody in town knew that my mother was the nurse. You know, she was kind of the Florence Nightingale of our little town. And if people whacked off a finger with a chainsaw, my mother would run out with ice and an igloo cooler to go save them. And they also dumped a lot of animals on our acreage that my mother would rescue. And she once compared my dad to a feral cat. You know, she said they want and deserve love and affection. They just don't know how to receive it. And when you give it to them, they either run away or they lash out because they're not used to it. And that's an analogy that always stayed with me regarding my dad, you know, hoping that maybe over time, just slathering love on him, never giving up on him, being there for him would change him. And, you know, between my mother and between Gary, my dad did a 180 in his life that still buoys me to this day.
Well, tell us about that last year, 2015. He is in ill health. He's obviously declining. And what was it that made you decide to be with him during that last year, given your relationship, given the fact that he had cut you off for a number of years, and still, even after, I wouldn't even call it a rapprochement, it was more of a truce, if you will. It was still a very difficult relationship, and I think your mother urged you to do that for him in his last year, and you know, when he was in his decline. Can you talk about that decision? Because that's a really rough decision for a person that you've only had tenuous bonds of affection throughout your life.
Each and every time I'd visit him, it was difficult, especially in the beginning, those last couple of years. You know, after my mother passed away, we tried to move him into assisted living, and he just something he hated. The rules that he had to live by that were forced upon him, he just did not abide by. And I remember my father looking at me one day, and he said, "I just want to die at home alone with dignity." And it struck me so deeply because that's exactly what I want and will want one day. You know, I want to be at home. And so I moved my dad. I moved, you know, heaven on earth to get my dad into, you know, a very small home that I helped him build on the plot of land that used to be where my grandma and grandpa lived, in a little town just about a mile or two away from where he lived his whole life. And that last couple of years, returning to him, I was busy. I was writing. It was a 10-hour drive from where I lived in Michigan. And yet I did it continuously because I wanted my father to know I was there and I hadn't given up on him. I, you know, truly became his sole caregiver. And I think through that, you know, you talk about all the pain and my father wanting me to prove myself and doing it in a difficult way. Perhaps it's irony. Perhaps, you know, I was self-inflicting wounds upon myself, but I think I proved to my father that I would never leave him, that I would always be there. And that was a big turning point. And every time I would be down, the Cardinals game were on, we would watch it. And, you know, he would pat the couch for me to take a seat by him. And that last couple of years opened our conversation up a lot more. You know, dementia is a terrible disease, but my dad had great clarity when he would watch the Cardinals and remember games of the past and a lot of the history. And he began to share stories of his life with me that he had never done before. And I got to know him in a way that I'd never before, and it changed me and him profoundly.
What did you learn during those conversations about his own life?
I learned that my dad loved where he grew up. He loved the Ozarks. He loved the beauty. He loved the people. He was proud of where he lived. He felt that in many ways I had turned my back on him and my history, that I had run away from where I grew up and where he believed I belonged. He never understood why I would want to move to a city and have a career that I did. I started to piece those pieces of his past together. I understood why he felt that way. And I began to share with him a lot about what it was like for me to be grow up gay and alone, especially after losing my brother, you know, and feeling that God had made a horrible error and that I should have been the one that had been taken. Mm. You know, I think my father began to recalibrate how he saw me, and I kind of changed how I saw him as well. So you're exactly right. You know, sports are a great uniter. We can be with people that we may have little in common with, and we're rooting for something bigger than ourselves, and we're beside someone. We might not have to say anything all the time, but it's a shared experience, and a common one that, you know, that changes us over the years.
I'm struck by something you wrote about taking a trip to St. Louis, and it was your father hated everything about St. Louis except for the Cardinals and the baseball stadium itself. I found that just really
He
amusing.
Despised everything urban. You know, he hated the mass of people. He hated fighting to get in. He, you know, my dad didn't like the unusual food. Just give him a hot dog at the ball game or a pizza after it was over. He hated the traffic. He hated everything. And, you know, and I write in the book, there's a seminal moment where, you know, right after my brother passed away, my dad forces me to go to a Cardinals game and leave my mother just, you know, weeks after my brother had died. And there was a rain delay in the middle of the game. You know, St. Louis, like Tulsa in the middle of the summer, humidity and thunderstorms come. And it gave my dad time to drink more beer. And when the rain slowed, I looked over at my dad and his face was still totally wet. And I realized for the first time that he was crying. And it struck me that my dad had asked me to run away because he couldn't express that kind of emotion in the small town where we lived. He couldn't mourn his child. And maybe sitting with me at a ball game gave him a sliver of hope. And that's the beauty of baseball and of sports.
As you began processing his death and the decision to write about your relationship, at what point did you realize that baseball would be such a large part of Magic season?
It was really sitting down with my dad during those last few games that we watched together, especially the pivotal one that I write about. And, you know, writers, we sit down, you're around us. We always have a notepad, post-its, our laptop in front of us. And I was always taking notes, which drove my father crazy. You know, conversations I would record, memories and moments. And it was watching that last game with my dad, it struck me that this would make an incredible structure because life is so much like the game itself. And it just seemed so personally meaningful to tell a story in this way. And I'd never really read a book that had been structured this way. And I'm big on structuring a novel that I write or a memoir in a kind of a unique way in which I can hang my hat. So it just all seemed to kind of coalesce and make sense.
Well, if you love baseball, if you've had a difficult relationship with a family member, this is a good book. Magic Season, A Son's Story. It's published by Hanover Square. Wade Rouse, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Novelist and memoirist Wade Rouse speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His latest memoir is titled Magic Season, A Son's Story. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.